Welcome to Mrigashira, a podcast that communicates with communicators. This podcast is a tribute to our fantastic color professionals, colleagues, and friends. I'm Charu Raizada, and this podcast is brought to you in association with DigiTales.
With shrinking earned media opportunities and the transition towards digital, the role of public affairs could never be more important to tell your story. I have with me today a prominent media policy, corporate communications and public affairs expert, Rahul Sharma, the managing director of APCO Worldwide in India. Rahul is also the past president and founding member of Public Affairs Forum of India, PAFI, a body playing an increasingly significant role in promoting public affairs as a profession as well as the development of India's economy. Stay with me on Mrigashira.
Hi Rahul, welcome to Mrigashira. Allow me to congratulate you for the strategic partnership with We Communicate. And we would love to know more about the partnership. What synergies are you looking at, given the changing dynamics in the Bani world?
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity, Charu. I'm delighted to be here. I think, we are all in a situation where we are experiencing the changes at a very rapid pace. I'm not talking about COVID, I'm not talking about the war, but despite all that, I mean, they have triggered many, many changes. But despite all that, I think the reality is that we go back to understanding the whole saying that change is the only constant. And increasingly, the changes are surprising us because a lot of us are not prepared for it. And that's where I think we are looking at that. We need to be in a situation, we need to be in a position where we are ready to anticipate, and not only anticipate, but we have the right tool to deliver to our clients. We have the right knowledge, we have the right analysis, we have the right understanding of the issues. And I think a lot of us miss out because we are constantly running. I think a lot of us miss out on one simple fact that I was taught in my years as a journalist and a newspaper editor was that the need and the ability to connect the dots. We get very focused on tactical stuff in delivery and we miss out the bigger picture. Today, increasingly, it is extremely necessary to focus on the big picture because when that is going to come and hit you. I mean, and I'm not talking about, I'm not talking only about, firms like ours, but more from a client's point of view. The client is also focused on a day-to-day run. You know, there are issues to be managed. And a lot of them, when they're sitting where they are, they get just so sucked into the daily routine that they miss out on the bigger picture. So you need somebody to be there to support them on that. And that's becoming increasingly critical. And I think that's one need that where we come in and fill it up very well because we do tend to take a larger view, look at the global picture, try to connect the dots and come up with suggestions that would be of help to our clients and their business. I think as we look to grow in this market, we are looking at, joining hands with like-minded firms, people. And in We Communicate, we found that there is a lot of synergy. And so we said, fine, we will start with, we'll start small. We'll start looking at things together, start by creating content together, and then take it from there. So that is where we are at the moment. We are excited about it. You would hear more from us.
Great. No, I think you've made very valid points. I think short-sightedness is something which companies need to be aware of and do away with and have to look at the big picture. And we see that all around us. And it's only the companies who have the ability to connect the dots are able to foresee and plan ahead. And I don't know, somehow my experience, I feel that it's particularly true where startups are concerned. They somehow seem to be a little more short-sighted as opposed to some of the, bigger firms. But anyway, so that's a discussion for.
Make a comment, sir. I think startups are, you know, I mean, essentially startups are looking at their second round of funding. And they do not understand the larger policy system and the environment that they work into. And then they get hit by something, boom, one fine morning. And they had not anticipated. They had not even thought about it. And at another level, nobody told them. Because a lot of these are young people who, you know, who are starting out, they're excited, they see opportunities, and they have great ideas, right? You know. But eventually, to put those ideas in place and make them worthwhile, it takes them on a long road of and turn them into sustainable businesses, you know. That is where they miss out. So they need some, you know, I personally feel they need, you know, they reach a point where they need to sit back and think, okay, this is the business I want to do, this is how I want to run it, and these are the kind of challenges that I'm going to face. A lot of them don't do it at this point in time. But they, as they grow, they realize that they need to take this step.
Yeah. So with the emergence and continual development of the internet, a door has opened for a new form of advocacy, right? Does social media align well in enabling individuals to participate in dialogue about social issues, policy changes, or even collaborate on change efforts? I mean, how has social media changed the whole advocacy landscape?
I think social media allows you to reach very targeted audience, you know. What has happened over a period of time, I mean, social media is also this, I mean, this vast jungle where many a times you won't even know what's happening, you know. And sometimes you see bursts and then, you know, everything dies out. So it's, you got to be very careful how you deal with social media, you know. I personally feel, let's not get too excited about it, okay? People come in, most people on social media are in transit, right? You put out something, there'll be several likes, but that doesn't mean it has been seen. But yeah, I mean, in terms of, how do I put it? In terms of, actually getting some numbers in place. So for example, if there is a story in the newspaper, you don't really know who's reading it or who it's getting out to, right? You know, a certain number of people read a newspaper and therefore you take it for granted that those many people might have read that headline in the story. In social media, if you're putting out a post on LinkedIn, you know you've got X number of followers, you know, you can buy space, you can, you know, kind of make it go viral, expand your reach. So those advantages are there. But should we get terribly excited about what's coming in terms of information? Sometimes yes, most times no. I mean, that is what my belief is. But yeah, I mean, as a tool, definitely allows you to reach out to audiences you were not able to reach out earlier.
So let's just look at this again. Now, what I'm trying to look at is that if when I'm going to look at influencing people for discussing social issues, policy change related work, should social media be just a layer to my strategy, or should it be a big focus area, or a very small focus area is what I'm understanding from what you're saying?
So it is definitely a focus area, and depends on what issues you're looking at. If you're looking at social issues, it depends entirely on who you want to reach out to. In many cases, if you're looking at critical policy issues, you need to have, you know, quiet back-end discussions with the government and resolve those problems, right? If you go and start firing on social media, sometimes it doesn't work. The point I'm trying to make is that, you know, it's case-to-case basis. There is no general thumb rule for everything. It's not the same medicine for everybody. You need to be very clear what the issue is, what you're trying to achieve, who you're trying to reach to, what kind of influences are you looking at? Whether those influences do have a space in the conversations that you want to create? Is it just reaching out to them going to be helpful, or you need to go beyond that? So you have to formulate a strategy case-to-case basis, depending on what the specific ask is. Sometimes you're looking at issues that are going to take longer to resolve, especially policy, you know, policy roadblocks. They don't happen overnight. You need to put in a proper effort. You need to build strategies. You need to get a lot of people together, like-minded and otherwise, and create a debate that will sometimes, I mean, we have worked on that. I mean, there are instances when we have worked on policy changes for our clients and build strategies that have gone up to as long as 24 months, right? So when you're getting into this space, one thing you've got to realize is that there is no fixed solution. Right? Unless and until you have a very strong case, which is going to be useful for more than one. Right? Governments don't like to deal with individual instances. They would like, you know, it's like larger good for larger number of people, which is what usually works well. So to get that, reach that point, it takes time. Yeah. I mean, if you look at the data bill that the government just pulled out, and I mean, it took a long time for a lot of people to have a lot of conversations at many layers before, you know, this, you know, you reached a point where the government said, okay, fine, we need to tweak it, we need to make changes, and we'll come back after taking all your, you know, suggestions and work. So the thing is that we are in an interconnected world. You have large global companies here. They have their issues. They have issues in many other countries. Geopolitics plays a role. Geocommerce plays a role. So it's not that simple. Like, what I'm trying to make say is that it, you cannot make it into a very simplistic, give it a simplistic form and say, okay, these are the 1, 2, 3, 4 things we would do, and therefore, it's a game that has to be played over a long period of time, understood well, and then you work on strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. So just looking at how businesses are really riding high on the sustainable innovation wave, right? So how can policy advocacy firms lead to shape the policy, especially right now when people are just not sure about so many aspects and they're still figuring out? So how can your role, you know, can really be stepped up, or what is it that you can bring to the table, the policy advocacy firms? Because this is what we need right now, some better policy.
We are, you know, at any given point in time, we are in an evolving situation. Right? I mean, there are many things that play a role in formulation of policy. There are many uncertainties, there are many, you know, places where you get knowledge from and you say, fine. But I think what's happening, we are supporting governments, you know, firms like ours. We're supporting governments and businesses to understand a few things. One is that if you really look at the point you made, you know, people's expectations are very different, and they are they are constantly evolving. Right? People have greater access to information. They have greater awareness about sustainable future, and companies and organizations, you know, they are facing a far greater demand to innovate sustainably than they were before. So there is also, on the flip side, there's also this, a greater self-awareness among business leaders to not just give back to society, but also proactively think of, you know, mitigating social and environmental risk. Right? So I think, you know, what we try to do is, support governments and businesses to understand these evolving expectations and then help them to adapt to the changes. So a few things that what we try and do is, you know, obviously, like I said, sensitize them, you know, and prepare them on what the environment is. So it's what I said earlier, connecting the dots. You know. How are things evolving, the directions that they might go, what could be the roadblock? But more importantly is knowledge development. I think that's very critical, because, you know, you got to help stakeholders to understand the subject better. Take, for example, ESG. Right? It's a complicated area. There is a view that it will work. There is a stronger view that it won't. You know, it's a lot of gibberish. Let me put it this way. These are, you know, acronyms that are created for the benefits of a few people. If you remember BRICS, which came in at some point in time. It worked very well, but today you see it's not. So, I mean, there are timely acronyms that are introduced to the system. People buy into it, people don't buy into it. But if you really sit back and look at where things are going, nobody has any clarity. Maybe on the E part, but definitely not the S and G part. There's a whole deal of confusion. So it's going to take a lot of time for these three things to click together, if at all. The other thing is, of course, for businesses, it's also to understand that partnerships are important and you have to have the right partners, because otherwise, I mean, there are a lot of things you can't do alone. You need to do it in partnership for the greater good of a greater number of people to reach a larger audience, to reach, make sure that a lot more people are benefiting from that. So obviously the need is to work with, sustainable leaders and partners, and we help to bridge this gap. We try and identify who, where people lie, and what are the common points that everybody can work on. And the other important thing that we need to do and we continue to do is, build better practices for our partners with regular policy dialogues, bringing the right people together so that that continues to encourage them to adapt responsibly. And responsible and sustainable practices, because unless you have all these four things that I said together, the journey can always be a bit difficult. I mean, everybody makes their journey. Some will make it better than others. But I think to ensure that we are fine-tuning the processes, if we get all these things right, which we come in, I think the journey becomes easier.
Right. So what worked yesterday may not necessarily work today or tomorrow, right? So advocacy campaigns continue to evolve, and you said that very rightly, and it's a journey always. So, and this is my last question to you. What are the major trends which are emerging, and how challenging is it to differentiate the messaging when everybody seems to be talking the same language?
It's a, like I said at the start, it's a difficult world, We are faced with challenges that we have never faced before. I mean, we can say that every time there's a new challenge that we have never faced this challenge before. But the reality is that there was a time when the world moved far slower than it does today. It was not as well connected as it is today. It did not get impacted by something, there was a great article I was reading yesterday. It basically said Nancy Pelosi has left Taiwan. The troubles begin now. So the thing is that for an Indian business, you might think, okay, so number one, who is Nancy Pelosi? How does she impact my life? But she does impact your life, because she goes to a place which is not considered a country by its neighbor, which thinks it's part of it, and is going to take steps which are going to make life difficult for businesses. Eventually, we are in a situation today where we see, there's a whole degree of nationalism that's happening all across. You see it here. Most countries want to be self-reliant because of the shocks that COVID has created to supply chains. United States wants its jobs back. You're talking about offshoring, friendshoring, the kind of stuff. Eventually, increasingly businesses are getting hit by politics, what's happening. So I remember, for example, soon after Donald Trump became the U.S. president, there was a team of very senior public affairs regulatory people from a very large global pharma company that was in town, and they wanted me to come and sort of give a little presentation that I went in. There were about 15, 18 people in the room from various parts of the world, including the U.S., the entire team. And I asked them, I said, how many of you are on Twitter? And if I remember correctly, none of them was. So I said, you run a global pharma business, right, including in the U.S. If you're not on Twitter, you have a problem. Because guess what? President Trump just kicked one of the major UN, US automaker very hard on Twitter. Those guys are still recovering from that shock. What happens? Because if the president is going on Twitter to make a policy statement that, which is going to impact your business, and you're not even aware of it, it becomes a problem. Right? So the thing is that anything and everything, I mean, what's happening between China and the world today is critical to be understood, because for the last so many decades, China has been very much a part of how the world works. And that's not going to change in a hurry. It'll change slowly, but it's not going to change in a hurry. So for the period that it doesn't change, those challenges have to be kept in mind. We have to continue to evolve our thinking, keeping in mind what's happening around us. Just not in our business, but more importantly, what's happening around us. And that's critical. So the point here is that there is a far greater need to be agile. Very, very smart, very, very quick on move to make sure that you are keeping up with the changes, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's technology, whether it's climate, and you've got to be resilient. So how does, what does it mean to be resilient? Basically, it's all about being prepared so that you have a plan B. You cannot just live with plan A. Sometimes you need a plan C. That plan C in place, right? So I think eventually the trends that we are picking up or probably need to take shape for the betterment of business and society, relooking at business resilience in light of COVID, how do we prepare ourselves for the shocks? Like I said, building a stronger, more inclusive and diverse workforce. Now that's critical, it's important, it's difficult. Because the nature of the workforce has also changed post-pandemic. It's getting difficult to get people back to work, to office. People have gotten used to working from home. How do you therefore, enhance your organizational cultures, your organizational behavior? How do you make the teams work better? Everybody is used to working in isolation. And they love it. Especially the younger people, many of them don't want to. People like us want to because we are used to working in an office environment. But I think the other thing is, you need to sort of look at other things, new practices such as, energy transition, circular economy, push climate action, leverage technology. There's a lot of it that's happening. How best you can use it to create your narratives and your messaging and identify the platforms you want to take it to, so that there's better connectivity. People, your consumers understand you better. The advantage of being online is that, everything works on phones now, and people spend an alarmingly high number of hours checking their phones, then probably looking at their laptops. In workplaces. With travel coming back, I think, a lot of my work gets done on my mobile. Sometimes there are days when I'm traveling, I don't even open my laptop. I have to see some presentations and extensions. But I think the other critical part is talent. We need to retain talent, which is slightly difficult because increasingly the younger people are more than happy to move on. Not necessarily because they are getting more money, but because they just want to do something different. And I mean, this is the shift that you see in post-pandemic, when the post-COVID world, that, I have done this for 3 years, I want to try out something new, so I want to go. Now, which is fine, You can't question that. It's an individual choice. But I think these changes, which at one point in time seem kind of small shifts, are beginning to impact the thought process of businesses. Because unless and until you are, you are in a happy space internally, it becomes difficult to sort of, connect with the outside world. So yeah, so all those things, and in terms of messaging, I think it is more important to understand that, we are speaking only when we are able to differentiate. Not necessarily that we have to speak all the time. There is a global truth that's outside, but then it's your truth too, which you want to take out when you are ready with it. And make sure that your messages are built on strong foundation, which is research, which is where which we come in, because just going out and saying something which is not backed up with research is always a question mark. Ensure that you are addressing diversity and inclusivity, and just keep updating as things evolve. It's, you know, if people come and tell me, how do you take the world to be, or how do you prepare yourself, I always tell them it's one day at a time.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It is one day at a time, and we are grappling and every day learning and evolving. And on that note, yeah. Thank you so much.
But, but at the same time, make sure that you have a, you know, wider view of the world. And yeah. Then one day at a time becomes easier than it could.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us, Amrita Shah. Pleasure having you.
Thanks, Shal. Thank you. Great talking to you.
Hope you enjoy listening to Mrigashira, a podcast for communication folks. Do share your suggestions and feedback on Mrigashira at digitales.co.in. Have a great week ahead, and do not forget to tune in next week. Adios.